You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Stevie Nicol, and there is only one place to start, and that's with the big game this weekend in the Premier League.
Within these shores, the rivalry of our day. They've given us some tremendous entertainment in recent times. Alexander-Arnold, wow!
Area. Salah, a little bit of skill, Mohamed Salah, Salah still, oh, set, well pass!
Wow, 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 Champion City hosting second place Liverpool with just a point separating them at the top of the table, and this game could be a title decider. As we now welcome in Nadim, Craig and Stuart along for the ride to talk all about this big game coming up on Sunday. But I will start with you, Stevie. Is this the best rivalry that the Premier League has seen?
Oh, I think that's... I don't think you can say that. I think you can say it's as good as any other rivalry. I mean, straight off the bat, I'm thinking about Man United-Arsenal. You know, with Wenger... and Fergie and the players battling it out and in each other's face, whether it's on the field or in the tunnel. I would say this is as intense, but a lot more friendly.
Okay.
It's a lot more of a football match, as opposed to there was a lot of physical battles in that particular one. So this is 100% all about football.
Stuart Robson, right now, are these currently the best two teams on the planet?
Yes, they are, because they both play their different styles of football. They both do it very well. Man City can... When people go to play at Man City or play against Man City, they're frightened of being totally outplayed, being embarrassed. And you can say the same when you go and play Liverpool, because their style of football, high intensity, getting balls in behind you, the front three, running in behind, scoring goals, they can outplay anybody. So they are the two best teams at the moment. We saw it again in midweek, although Man City didn't play at their very best. You saw Liverpool destroy, really, Benfica over the game. So they certainly are the best two teams on the planet at the moment.
Craig, would you agree that they're the two best in the world right now?
Two best in England, I'd say. I think it would be a bit English biased, UK biased to suggest that with what we saw Real Madrid do to Chelsea, although Chelsea aren't on the level that these two are. Bayern Munich as well, they're having some problems. But yeah, it's look, they're two great sides with two great managers. But to go back to the initial question to Stevie, which I think it was, at the moment, this rivalry is not a patch on those great Man United-Arsenal games, because, as Stevie said, they had everything. And also they had a manager who had really cemented his place in Sir Alex Ferguson, the dominance, and Wenger coming in pretty much as a nobody at the time, an unknown certainly, and building a great Arsenal side. Now, both these managers have come in from abroad. Clearly, they're both great. I think Klopp's had a lot more work to do from the starting point of where Liverpool were. And they've both done it brilliantly. And this game really is just a toss of a coin. I mean, that's how I think evenly matched these two sides are.
Nadim, Liverpool were 14 points behind City over the Christmas break. Now we see it's just 1 point. Would you say that the momentum's with them?
Yeah, you'd have to say that. I think given the amount of games that they've won in a row, but then this is similar to what Man City did earlier in the season as well and what they did last season. When a side can go and win 10-plus games in a row, the pressure is applied to a sort of such a special level to the opposition that, you know, if you draw a game, like, people feel like you're out of form. I think this is just a general ebb and flow of the season. Like, we look at this situation now. And say if they weren't playing against each other and both teams won out, there'd be another season whereby one team would finish on 96 and one would be on 97 points. So even though there was a 14-point gap at Christmas time or whenever it was, the fact is Liverpool were still on track to be posting like 80, 90-plus points in a season, which more often than not will have you involved in either the title race or winning the title itself. But for Liverpool, you know, the momentum is with them because they are getting the results. But this is it's a really interesting game, this one, just because, like, do Liverpool have to, like, Liverpool, are they going to go out and just try and win this game? Because I think if they were playing at home, then it makes perfect sense. You know, you can picture how it's going to go. But for this now to be playing away to Manchester City, with City currently being in the lead at the top of the table and having one or two people doubting them, you know, it makes for a really, really intriguing game.
Well, I'm not sure, Nadim. Surely there's only one thing going to happen in this game. Both sides are getting after it. I don't think Liverpool are capable of going about it any other way, regardless of whether they're home or away. You know, I just can't imagine that this game is going to be anything other than both sides knocking whatever they can out of each other, as far as playing football is concerned. Both sides are going to go forward 100%. There ain't going to be no sitting tight and holding a line and this and that. These two sides are absolutely going to go after it. And the fact that they're going to go after it, it's got goals written all over it. If there's one thing both sides struggle with, it's defensively. They're giving chances up. And right now, Alisson is coming up with a save a game, in my opinion, right now. And Edison isn't. So I think this game's got goals written all over it. There can't be anything other than two sides getting after it, surely.
Which makes me think, Stevie, that for all the attacking players on these teams, and my God, they're brilliant to watch, that I've got a feeling that it's going to be the team that defends the best that's going to come out on top. It maybe makes the least mistakes, because, as you said, both of them have been so open. But I think for all the attacking players, I think the team that gets that defensive balance correct on the day, and we know there's no Diaz for Man City, but we know they've got really good players that can compensate for that. And I think the ones that make the least mistakes defensively, I think, can win this game, because, as you say, I think it's going to be hell for leather stuff. But both of them have given up a lot of chances of late. And I think it comes down to that in this game. Who defends the best picks up the points.
Stuart, you weren't too impressed with Man City midweek against Atleti in the Champions League. Do you think that they may have had one eye on this game?
I don't think that was the case. I think they came up against a side that defended deeply, and Man City for too long in that game passed it square and passed it backwards. Only when they brought on Foden and he started getting turned and causing problems and running with the ball did they look as though they were going to break Atletico Madrid down. But there were just one or two chances, half chances for Atletico on the counter-attack, where the back four, Walker's going to come into the back four probably, but with Laporte and Stones as the centre-half, and Craig was just talking about defensively, I worry about those two with the likes of Mane making diagonal runs from outside to win, Salah making diagonal runs from outside to him, because neither have got great pace. So how does Pep Guardiola cope with that? Does he have Walker as a third centre-half just to make sure they've got that pace in the back three? I'm not sure. That's what he has to decide, or whether he brings Rodri back so they can get their two fullbacks playing higher up the field. That's a defensive decision that Pep Guardiola's got to make in this game.
Nadim, what do you make of what Stu's saying?
I think it's interesting, because I think for these two sides, in fact, they've been paired up against each other, you know, a ton, and they've all played in very big games throughout the past few seasons. So it's no surprise that, say, Salah will want to run in behind, or say Diaz will want to run in behind, or Mane or anything like that. And I think as a consequence, City, like, these teams, they know how to play against each other in some ways. Like, nobody should be surprised. I think for Liverpool, you know, they'll play it around the back, but they're not shy in terms of going out and being more direct. Whereas for City, you can almost try and press them more, because they are trying to play it around the back. But if they beat your press, then before you know it, you're in trouble. So there should be no surprises in there. For those players who are going to be on the field, they're not going to be experiencing it for the first time. Like, over the past two, three seasons, or maybe more, like, I think it's probably three seasons ago, they've played in very, very significant games against each other when it's to do with title run-ins and things like that. And I think they've played under that pressure, and they understand what to expect from each other, because the key players for both sides are still basically the same. So I think it does make for a very, very good game, very interesting game. And then, you know, for the balance as well, say, last set I've seen Trent play, and if you imagine a full strength Phil Foden going up against him again and really pushing him on the back foot, you know, these are the questions that need to be asked. And, you know, I think as the guys were saying defensively, you know, if you don't make any mistakes, you know, you're going to be in with a chance. But I'd have to say it's just whoever's clinical on the day, because as far as I go, you know, you look at the quality of the players on the field. You know, the first goal might not necessarily decide the game, but it'll definitely decide on the flow of the game. And I think if you've sort of, whoever can take their chance the earliest, I think that kind of sets the tone for the rest of the match.
Steve, will it help Liverpool that they had an easier game against Benfica midweek than what City had against Atletico?
Absolutely, yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's no question. Manchester City were tested physically and mentally, and probably mentally as much as anything. You know, it's one thing to be playing the game in the opposition's defensive third, but it's another thing when you're continually getting pushed away and you can't break it down. That no question comes into your mind. And as I said, physically as well. So yeah, I think there's a little bit of an advantage. At the end of the day, this game's going to come down to a little something. Whether it's a little bit of physicality, or whether somebody drops the ball mentally, or whether somebody makes a mistake, as Craig was saying. It's going to come down to just little tiny things that's going to end up whether one side wins or loses.
Who's the front
three? I think there was some mental frustration there in that game, Kate, in that Atleti game. My God, it was mentally frustrating to watch as well, because they were so negative. But I'm not saying there was no physical output or input in terms of the exertion the City players had to put in, but it wasn't the most end-to-end game, because Atleti basically allowed them the ball. Now, it was frustrating, and the passing at times wasn't at their best, not until particularly they made the changes. But it wasn't the game with the most exertion for them, because they had so much dominance. So I think, yeah, a little bit maybe mentally frustrating for them. But, it's not as if, you know, there was a couple of attacks that Robbo mentioned. A couple of times it was a little bit hairy for them, but not too many. So I don't think they had to overexert themselves in this game. It was more a game of patience and frustration, whereas obviously this one on Sunday is just going to be, I would imagine, end-to-end.
City obviously were in for Harry Kane in the summer. It was followed very closely. Stuart, do you think that had they managed to get that target man that they wanted, that Liverpool would have been able to close a gap, like a double-digit gap like they did?
We won't know, because they still have played well, Man City, without a centre-forward. And Guardiola likes playing at times without a centre-forward. So what Liverpool have to be very careful of are the runs of Kevin De Bruyne and the runs from Gundogan. They're the two key players for me, for Man City. When the centre-forward comes deep, the likes of Van Dijk, the likes of Konate, they've got to see those runs from coming from midfield. Felipe did it for much of the game for Atleti. The one time he made a mistake, he came out on the wrong angle. De Bruyne gets in and scores. So the two centre-halves have got to be key for Liverpool to watch those midfield runs. But I'm not sure it would change it if Kane was playing for Man City at the moment.
Nadim, will Phil Foden start?
It seems like he kind of has to be honest. I think the impact he had in midweek against Atletico was very, very significant. And in some ways, you know, you can picture him playing out wide in this match here and really going to take it out one of the Liverpool fullbacks. I think he did quite well in the game, which, you know, that was at Anfield, where City finally won for the first time in like 18 years. And overall, I think he understands the assignment. I think at times for some of the other City players, they are very good. Like even Riyad Mahrez had an incredible season as a top scorer, but he won't necessarily take it as directly at somebody as, say, Foden will. So it wouldn't be a surprise if I saw him in the side. And I think that's going to be a sort of key battle, because for some of those one-on-one efforts, because we saw in the game at Anfield earlier in the season, because it was James Milner playing right back at the time, and there were questions like, should he have been sent off for the fouls that he was putting in against him? So I think Phil Foden will likely start. And, you know, for such a young man, it's good to see the sort of impact that he has in this side.
Just to go back to that point, Kate.
Go on, Craig.
No, I want to go back just briefly to the Kane point. I am of the opinion that he would have moved the needle even more for City. I mean, we've seen some of his performances this season in a an okay Tottenham side. But I do think he would have moved the needle for them big time. Yeah, they've scored goals and they've coped. But I go back to this point. OK, City didn't meet a very high valuation in the end from Tottenham. But Pep Guardiola did not chase this player because he thought he was going to make City a poorer side. He chased Harry Kane, and he wanted Harry Kane because he thought he could make the difference in tight games, in big competitions. And that's why he went after the player. Now, it never happened, but clearly he felt that obviously City were going to be a better team with Harry Kane in that squad. So I personally think had they got Kane in the summer, they may have been already out of sight, but they didn't. And I have to say they've coped admirably. But yeah, I think for me, his quality would have certainly shifted the needle big time for City.
Stevie, midweek, it was Diaz, Mane and Salah. Big question is, for this game, who's the front three?
Oof. Well, I would start off by saying I think Bobby Firmino is now fifth in line. You know, I always thought that at their best, if they were all at their best, the front three picked itself. But the truth is, Firmino's not really been kicking a ball for a while. You could argue that Salah hasn't quite been at his best, but he's playing. Mane's playing, no question. So for me, it's do you pick Diaz or do you pick Diogo Jota? And I don't think you can make a mistake, because if you pick Jota, he can play through the middle and you know you can whip balls in, because this kid in the air is fantastic. But you could also play Diaz wide and put Mane in the middle, or you could put Salah in the middle and play Diaz and Mane wide. I mean, so for me, the question is it Diaz or Diogo Jota? And I'm not quite sure.
And you're not concerned about Salah not being able to score from open play in the last six games?
No, although big game, huge game, biggest game of the season, you're not playing your star man. Sorry. Not a chance. He's first on.
Listen,
Stevie was talking about that front three?
me. I've been, as you know, I've been away for a month, so I haven't really been involved or watched much. But I thought I heard Stevie say a week ago that Jota had to start. So he's obviously a little bit conflicted now. And listen,
no, that's not true at all. That's the thing. When you don't watch, you miss what's actually said. Because what I said was, I prefer Firmino, but he hasn't been playing well, so Jota has to start.
Okay.
Hey, thank you.
Let me go back to the Salah point. There's not a man alive that's kicked more walls in the ESPN campus than that man, Stevie Nicol, over some of Mo Salah's antics on the field. And then he just does something brilliant out of the blue and all is forgiven. That's kind of where he is, I suppose, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, he cannot play this guy. If he doesn't start, I'm sorry. I'm not even going to watch the game. If he doesn't start.
Stuart, what's your thoughts on the front three?
Well, I would actually play Jota through the middle and I'd play Salah and Mane either side of him and come in on those diagonal runs and try and expose Man City's lack of pace. And Nedham said, you know what's coming. But if you lack pace and you get even if they get a couple of yards head start, I think Mane and Salah can get in behind. I think Jota can get in behind them as well. So that's going to be key to the game, I think. Jota will play for me. I think he's, as Stevie said, he's good in the air. He can run in behind. He played for Portugal in the hole, in number 10 position against North Macedonia. It allowed the wide players to make forward runs. He's got to start for me.
Craig, just want to go back to Salah, because this is a good one to get going with Stevie. Just to do with his contract issues. We know June 2023, we've been talking about that. He said recently, it's not the time to talk about it when it comes to his contract. Stevie said, Liverpool should be breaking the bank to keep a player like him. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to ask yourself, what's it going to cost to replace his goals and his moments of brilliance? And the answer is as much, if not more, than what probably he's looking for as a salary. Now, it is a business after all, and there's going to be a ceiling. We've seen that with other clubs. We've seen it at Chelsea before the sanctions hit with certain players like Rudiger and others. I think the answer is they've got to try absolutely everything to keep him, because replacing him is going to be nigh on impossible. So he's holding all the cards big time. I would go all out to try and keep him, because you're going to have to end up paying a huge transfer for somebody and huge wages. And when it boils down to it, the numbers are probably going to be similar or more. So a difficult situation for clubs to be in, but that's the power of the player, the elite players these days.
We put you guys in a difficult situation to make a prediction for this game. And three of you actually went for a draw, a 2-2 draw, like we saw last time out as well. Nadim, Stewart and Steve all going for 2-2. Craig Burley, the first to go for a Man City win. Yesterday we had two who went for a Liverpool win. But I want to come to you, Nadim, on this one. If it is a draw, are City then going to go on to win the title? And will it come down to this game?
I just think, anyway, with regards to this game, obviously it's huge, and it'll be the team. If someone wins, they're going to be on the front foot between now and the end of the season. But the fact is, like, you've still got seven other games to go, and you know, some people are saying Liverpool's running hard, and I can see that, because say you're coming up against a Spurs side that's in form, like I'm going to say a United side that are trying to finish in the top four. So there's no guarantee that anything's going to be done after this. And I think if you probably pick up that tone from the players, that whoever wins, you won't see them doing cartwheels on the field, because they understand that the business isn't done yet. I think if this came in maybe 3-4 weeks' time, then yes, you'd probably feel it's more definitive. But it's just, as I say, it's a big chance to get the upper hand, but there's so much more work to be done. And as you can see from some of those fixtures there, like Liverpool... It's not over. And I think if anybody says that whoever's going to win is just going to win all those games, I think we're very much missing the point, because this is one of the beauties of the Premier League. The fact is that if you're not at your best on any particular moment, you could lose a match. So for them, you know, this is the first game in what is going to be a very long, significant run for them between now and the end of the season, if they want to achieve their goals from both sides.
Stevie, you've gone for a draw, but do Liverpool need to win this one?
Yes. I mean, I'm looking at City's running, and I'm thinking, at West Ham, tough one. If I could choose, I would rather have City's running than Liverpool's. So it could be the decider, yeah. I mean, I think Liverpool do have to win it. I 100% agree with Nadim that one of these sides and those games that are left are going to slip up. I'm not saying there's going to be a loss, but there's going to be a slip up somewhere. Because that's just what happens.
But even so,
a lot of fence sitters in this show, isn't there, going for the draw, Kate?
Well, the problem is you can't.
So why have you gone for City? Because you're the first that I've seen since I've been on the last 2 days that's gone for a City win.
Well, that really, I saw Stevie's email this morning said 2-2, so I thought I'd go to something different. But no, I'm not convinced, to be honest with you. It's such a hard call, and it could go either way. I think if you look, last time Liverpool got a victory, this doesn't mean a lot. The last victory Liverpool had in this fixture was 2019. The last four, there's been two City wins and two draws. So they've just slightly got the upper hand recently in terms of results. And that's the only, and they're at home at the Etihad. And that's the only reason I've gone for a City win. I haven't convinced myself, but that's the only reason.
Stuart, do Liverpool need a win in this one? I know you've gone for a draw, but do they need the win?
You'd think so, because they've got to keep that momentum going. Whoever comes out of this on top, and I would say it's on top for Man City if they get a draw, they've got the momentum. I think if Liverpool win, I think they go and win the title, because the momentum will be with them. They've got everything to play for. It's going to be a great game, but Liverpool need to win it, I think.
Well, it's very exciting that this is coming up this weekend. And then next weekend, they'll be doing it all over again, but that's in the FA Cup. We do have it here for you on ESPN Plus, and there'll be a lot of talk in the build-up to that game. Man City and Liverpool again next weekend in the FA Cup.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. La Liga's latest round got underway with a game between Sevilla and Granada on Friday night. And what a game it ended up being. We'll take it to the 23rd minute and it would actually be Granada opening the scoring. Darwin Machisi here. Nice one.
Fantastic strike. Nobody comes and closes him. Look at this. Right in the middle of the goal. And the keeper's got no chance of getting close to it.
Won't be too long later until Sevilla would tie it up. Jesus Navas with the cross in. Diego Carlos heading it.
Well, if he could do that with City when he was there, Navas, he'd probably still be there. Great ball in. And that's a great header. Back across the goalkeeper.
You should know, Stevie, that's his spiritual home, Sevilla. 66 minutes, Sevilla taking the lead now with a Lucas Ocampos tap-in, turning the game on its head. And then to the 76, and here we go. This is when it all starts to get a little bit feisty, a little bit wild. Rafa Mir would score, and it looked as though Sevilla had doubled that lead, but VAR would intervene. And what it would show is Mir hitting Herman Sanchez's face with his elbow. He's then booked with a yellow card. Disallowed.
That's a complete and utter accident. The defender for me, he's bending down. I would not have disallowed that.
88th minute, Jorge Molina crossing again. Victor Diaz heading it in for an equaliser for Granada. And there's just 2 minutes left in the game, or so we thought. We'll take it right in two. There was 90 plus three where we got a 3-2 lead and then it goes all the way up to 90 plus nine in the game. And Oliver Torres would find Papu Gomez for the goal. So Ivan Rakitic with the goal that you just saw. And then Papu Gomez to make it 4-2 and earn a crucial 3 points for Sevilla. Julen Lopetegui walking off there with hands in pockets, probably with a big sigh of relief as well. Wild ending to that game. 4-2 it finished. We'll take a look at what that means in La Liga's table right now. That game between Barca and Sevilla did see Sevilla give up second spot, although Barca do have the chance to take that back from them. Very interesting times at the top of the table. Stuart Robson was watching that game. What stood out to you from it, Stuart?
Well, as we said so many times with Sevilla, the first 20-25 minutes, they play too slowly. There's no penetration. They go through the game too slow. They go 1-0 down and suddenly they change their ways. They change their system slightly. Ocampos played closer to El Naziri. It meant Navas got forward down the right-hand side and got crosses into the box. Martial was really poor, whether he played in that hole there or whether he played in the centre-forward in the second half of the game. And they made lots of changes. The game was an excellent game in the second half. And Granada played their part as well, because although the stats say that they only had 29%, I think it said on there, they still had almost as many shots. And late on in the game, they hit the post, had a great save from Bono as well. It was a very good game. Very good second half, a very poor first half from Sevilla.
Let's stick with La Liga's match day then, shall we, Stuart? We've got Real Madrid in action against Getafe. Ooh. We know what happened the last time these two sides met. Getafe won the game. With what we've seen this week from Real Madrid, it's been a bit up and down. They're finishing in it on and up after that Champions League game. So which Madrid side will we see in this clash?
Well, I think we're going to see a few changes because I think Ancelotti, for once, will probably rest one or two of the older players. So it's a chance maybe for Camavinga. Valverde, who played against Chelsea, will probably play that little bit deeper. I'm sure Vasquez will come in at right back. So it's going to be a slightly different side. But I can't see Getafe causing too many problems. Yes, they've been much better under the manager, Flores. But when you look at the goals, they've only scored, I think, 28, 29 goals in 30-odd games. So they're not going to cause Real Madrid too many problems. But they are good defensively. And that's where we're going to see whether Real Madrid are at their very best, where they can get Vinicius Junior and Benzema linking up again, where they can get Asensio coming in off that right-hand side if he plays. So it's whether they can break Daffy down. That's going to be the big question for Real Madrid.
And whether he plays Karim Benzema. Doesn't he need to play him in every game? I know, obviously, there's a lot of criticism with if Ancelotti picks the same side too much, but we see Real Madrid without Benzema, and it's like a completely different side, Stuart. Mm.
I think he has to play him. I think even if he plays him for 60 minutes and they attack the game and they get a couple of goals up, then they can take him off because he is their key player, and there's no question about it. Not just the goals, the way he's got all the assists, the way he links up the play, the different style of play they have with him in the side, because when he hasn't been in the side, they've looked very one-dimensional.
And meanwhile, you're going to be commentating the game between Levante and Barcelona. Mm. Barcelona being great to watch of late. Levante in a bit of a battle at the bottom, but have been known to cause problems, especially for the bigger sides over recent years. What are you looking forward to in this clash?
I'm looking forward to seeing Barcelona play at their very best. I don't think they were at their best against Eintracht Frankfurt. I did one of the early games. Levante got a draw with Real Madrid at home, 3-3, which was a great game. I'm not sure this is going to be quite the same. I think Barcelona will dominate possession. Levante play with a back three. It will become a back five. So Barcelona are going to have a lot of the ball. Again, have they got the quality to break the opposition down? I'm sure they have. The movement of Torres, Dembele, if he's playing, Aubameyang, the midfield players. De Jong looks a much better player at the moment. Pedri, one of the best players in the world. I think it should be a Barcelona win. But Levante are in a good bit of form at the moment.
Oh, yes, they are. And they're going to be great to watch, as always, as La Liga always is on ESPN+. And the good news, as you just heard, is that game will have Stuart Robson on the call for it. Levante against Barcelona coming up on Sunday. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Some Friday night action in the Bundesliga brought us Stuttgart and Borussia Dortmund looking to bounce back after that loss to RB Leipzig last time out. This we did not want to see, Stevie. Gio Reyna, some minutes into the game, having to come off.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange one. Clearly, there's no challenge. He just looks as though he's felt something. This is the right thing, coming off. Let's just hope it's precautionary, shall we say.
Let's definitely hope that. Julian Brandt came on for him and really did make his presence felt. This is Haaland who would set him up for the first goal here.
Well, it was very nicely done, very nicely worked, and an easy finish. Unfortunately,
at first, they were unsure, but VAR would check it.
Well, I actually thought it was offside as well the first time I saw it, but fortunately we got VAR. It was checked, and it's a goal.
It is a goal. And so that was the first of the goals, and something for Dortmund to start smiling about after what was a difficult opening stages for them. Mm. This is Marmoush with a one-on-one, chips it too high.
Yeah, just gets a little close to the keeper. Doesn't have a lot of space to chip that over and get it under the crossbar, and indeed doesn't.
This time, it is Marco Reus who finds the super sub of Julian Brandt for his second goal of the game. 2-0 it would finish.
Yeah, great finish. Just hits through it. Little bit of pace and spin on it. Keeper's going the other way initially. Can't get back for it.
And they've stuck it right back into the thick of the relegation battle with that result. Dortmund back to winning ways after that loss, as mentioned, to Leipzig, and hoping to put that pressure on Bayern at the top of the table. Our Archie in touch was at the game for us today. Afterwards, he caught up with Emre Can to talk about Gio Reyna's latest injury.
Just finally, we have to talk about your teammate, Gio Reyna. I don't know what voodoo doll is controlling him, but the luck that he's having with injuries right now, we saw him in tears going down the tunnel. What can you say about that?
It's difficult to say something. It's It's a pity, you know. He's such a good footballer, he's such a good guy, and he's very young. And then again, I think, I don't know, but I think it's a muscle injury again, and I hope it's nothing serious. And yeah, he's young, you have to work, you have to get in shape, and of course it's difficult, you know, it's difficult, but you have to work, you have to come stronger back, and you have to work hard.
Just after you mentioned the muscle injury there, do you feel like you're being worked very hard in training? Are these muscle injuries happening for a reason?
I think nobody knows in the club, or nobody knows from where this comes, you know. And of course we train well. I think other teams train well too, but I think it's not just one thing where you can say, okay, that's why we have so many muscle injuries. Sure. And, but of course we know that we had this year too many.
So that result does mean that it is just a little closer for now for Borussia Dortmund to Bayern Munich. Obviously didn't go their way last time out, but Bayern Munich do face Augsburg this weekend, a side that they were beaten by in the reverse fixture. Anyway, as mentioned, Archie was at the game for us. He's also with Jan Agafyortov. We can hear from them now. In fact, I'll send it right over to you, Archie. I'd love to know more about what's going on with Gio Reyna.
Thanks, Kate. It's not just about Gio Reyna, though. It's about the amount of injuries that Borussia Dortmund have had. I think the most public of them has been Gio Reyna, because we've seen him in tears every time that he's having to come off. And you can understand why. A teenager here who's coming back to his first major injury, Jan. And every time it seems there are question marks over whether the club are getting it right on when he can play again.
Well, first of all, Archie, I feel sorry for the lad, the young lad, and I feel the way he's showing his feelings. I think that's fantastic. But if I was the management of Dortmund, I would be crying too, because there are too many muscles injuries. You're talking about Gio Reyna, you're also talking about Erling Haaland, and sometimes the critic is only been on him. Ah, he's a world star, but he's always injured and so on. And we've heard the same with Gio Reyna and blah, 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 big talent and so on. There is a massive problem at the club, and this week they sacked their physiotherapist, and as I've talked to other people, they said this should be the start, because you can't have it like this, because the numbers of injuries they've had on muscles this season, that is not in the top of the Bundesliga.
Let's look at the performance. They've received a lot of criticism this week, Borussia Dortmund, after what happened against RB Leipzig. Is there a positive to be drawn out of that, coming to a stadium like this, like Stuttgart, full house, everyone on their back?
I think there is, Archie, and I think we saw the Leipzig game, and they're losing at Leverkusen, and losing at Bayern at home, and so on and so on. I think the way they handled themselves today, coming back here at the stadium, the atmosphere, Archie, was fantastic. I mean, underestimated Stuttgart, to be fair, in that department. A lot of criticism, a lot of individual players being pointed at in the German media. These players will not be at the club next season. We need Marco Rose players who can do more pressing and so on and so on. And then coming back and winning 2-0 today, I think that was a good performance. Professional, and you saw they were happy. And also there's small things that I like to see. They score the first goal, the 1-0 goal, big celebration, all the players involved. That just was a signal that the team atmosphere is good for them, and they have to end this season. And this season for them will be a start of a new season. And Stevie will love that in the studio. Then it's getting closer in the German Bundesliga.
It's close at the bottom as well. Stuttgart remain in a relegation battle. Have to see what happens with Bielefeld, Wolfsburg and Hertha Union. Moving on to Bayern, we found out today that they will not be losing any points after their extra man for 20 seconds or so in Freiburg. They're playing Augsburg on Saturday, a team who have taken more points against Bayern in the last 8 years or so than Borussia Dortmund have in the Bundesliga. So a very dangerous opposition, Jan.
It's always dangerous for Bayern. It's always played. They're playing Weinziel, who used to be the amateurs for Bayern, and now he's come back. I think he's beaten them three times. So it's a big chance for them. Dortmund didn't get any help from DFB or what DFL or whatever decided on a green table, on a green tisch, you would say in Germany. 6 points. Should we still hope for a fight, Archie? Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So Ricardo Pepi, just a quick word on him. He's still struggling to make his mark. At what point do we say he's getting used to the league? Or do we say he needs... What does he need, Jan? He needs, that's my question.
He needs goals. I've been in that situation. Remember coming to Swindon and I didn't get the goals early doors in a new country. Then you start doubting yourself. You're losing a bit confidence and you think, should I change my way of playing? And then you start doing compromises with yourself and then it's a bad circle for him. So he needs goals. Goals, goals. That simple and that difficult. Start tomorrow.
We'll see if he does. Just finally, very quickly, Eintracht Frankfurt got a 1-1 draw last night at Barcelona. That was quite a tasty atmosphere. We were both there.
Yeah.
Question for me is, you're not going to go to the Camp Nou and win, are you?
I can't because I would probably be divorced.
Not
if
you,
I do.
Eintracht Frankfurt.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I went into my marriage there. You went in there. No, I'm staying home. Mariana, I will go on a holiday with you. I will do. But they'll beat Barcelona. They'll beat Barcelona.
Okay, you heard it here first. Eintracht Frankfurt are going to pull off a miracle and knock Barcelona out of the Europa League.
Said by a big Eintracht Frankfurt fan there in Jan Agafiatov. Dolo, good to see that you're keeping the marriage strong there, Jan, and putting the wife before the football. Thanks so much, guys. We look forward to hearing good news on Gio Reyna's injury. The upcoming Bundesliga schedule is as follows, as you saw and heard the guys talking about. It is Bayern taking on Augsburg. We'll see if Ricardo Pepi plays and can get his first goal for the club in that one. Whole slate of action for you, as always, on ESPN+, and it all ends with Leipzig against Hoffenheim.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
MLS action coming up this weekend. All matches available on ESPN Plus to look out for on Saturday. Inter Miami against the Revs, also on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. And on Sunday, Charlotte FC taking on Atlanta United. Newcastle picked up an important 3 points Friday night in the Premier League with a 1-0 win over Wolves. Just a penalty to decide the game. Chris Wood earning and scoring it 1-0. 3 points more for the Geordies. 10 points away from the bottom three there, Stevie. Mm. Things are looking a bit better for them, aren't they?
I would be surprised if 34 points doesn't do it, because quite frankly, you can throw Everton in there. They've got a horrendous run in. So I actually think Newcastle are going to be comfortable. I also think Newcastle will win more games between now and the end of the season. So, yeah, when we're talking about relegation now, unlike the first half of the season, Newcastle, in my opinion, are not even in the conversation.
Yeah, there are a few that are, though, as you saw from that table there, and that conversation will continue on FC. Thanks for joining us for the latest edition. We'll see you next time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Stevie's here in the studio. We have Nadim, Craig and Stuart along for the ride as well. And a few questions in, starting with one for me. Some found out last night that I'm a quarter Scottish.
A quarter? How did you get it?
Well, the last name's Scottish because my granddad was Scottish and my grandma was English. And then on the other side, they're both English, so I'm a quarter Scottish.
No, you're not. 50%.
Why am I 50%?
You're half and half.
All right, I'm 50% Scottish. For Kay, given you're a quarter Scottish, or 50% according to Stevie, can you understand Craig and Stevie when they converse in Scottish? I can.
I bet you can. Because you speak weird in Middlesbrough as well, so...
We're not too far away from you, are we?
A little bit the same.
In fact, my granddad's from Ayrshire, near the racetrack.
There you go. Yep. Craig, nice to hear that.
Yeah, so there you are. Of course I understand them. All right, Craig, to the boys. How do you feel about these new UEFA rules about historical achievements in terms of big clubs not qualifying the traditional way?
I saw the headline. That's really all I know about it at the moment.
So basically, you don't have to finish in the top four, but they can look at your history and say, oh, well, you've done all right in previous seasons or previously, so we're going to give you a
pass. Well, I'm a big fan of, as you know, I'm a big, through my grandson, my son, I'm a big fan of Nottingham Forest. And so I'm really looking forward to Nottingham Forest returning to the top table as former European champions. I mean, come on. You've got to prioritise current form and ambition and achievement. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, what's the point?
All right, Stuart, the next one for you, I'm going to ask you, do any of the forwards press the goalkeeper as efficiently as Benzema? Off the top of my head, he scored as a result of pressing the keeper in the Champions League final, PSG, and against Chelsea.
Hold on, Benzema scored off the top of your head.
I hope he wouldn't score off the top of my head. That would be a bit shiny, wouldn't it? I think he's very good at pressing the ball, and he's clever at pressing. He doesn't just run at the goalkeeper. When you saw him run at Mendy the other day, he started to go towards him, and he read exactly what he was going to do. I'm sure there's other centre forwards that do it quite well, but Benzema has done it excellently over the last couple of years, and he enjoys going and closing the ball down, and he also forces goalkeepers to play one way. So that's why he's a good team man, that's why he's an intelligent footballer, and that's why he has scored goals closing the goalkeeper down.
Stevie's just nodding away like this.
Football intelligence. That's what it is.
That is what it is.
Yep. Some of the situations.
Hold on, listen. That's the man that said Benzema only scores tap-ins.
I was going to leave it out, Craig, but I'm glad you brought it up.
when did you ever listen to a word Dan Thomas said?
I was on the show when you said it. He just kept bringing it back up because he likes to, you know.
Right.
I love that you're denying it now.
Okay, like, I must admit, though.
I didn't say
it. I never denied it, then.
No,
going to
I must admit, though, he is, to be fair to Stevie, he's got enough money in the bank with Lukaku at the moment. He's dining out on that one, for sure.
What about that header the other day? I'll tell you what, I was going mental in the house.
You've just given him a chance to go off on that one again. All right.
Yeah.
Craig, it is great to have you back.
Is it?
Sergeant Barnes.
Who said that?
Sergeant Barnes for.
Somebody
said nobody.
Somebody stuck that in. Somebody
listen,
behind the scenes.
Listen, even I'm
hand.
Not. Listen, I'm not, even You're I'm right. not happy to have myself back. Trust me.
Craig, it is great to have you back. I'll say it again. How big of a disaster would it be for Everton if they go down and don't come right back up? The Championship is filled with big traditional clubs who went down only to never return to top flight football.
Yeah, it would be huge. It would be huge for them. The recruitment and has been horrendous. I think, and there's people that know a lot more about it than me, but I think there has been interference in certain strategies by ownership, by, is it Moshiri? Mm. Who I think have tried to shoehorn them down a certain path with certain things. It's just been terrible. Obviously, Lampard's gone in there. He's not been able to stop the sinking ship thus far. I saw some headlines today even talking about potentially him being sacked before the end of the season if it becomes even more desperate. And as Stevie knows better than me, having played in Merseyside for so long, it's such a traditionally great club, great place to go and play. We've got this new stadium on the horizon, but they're not good enough. They're not too good to go down. They're just not. And you only got to look at, I mentioned Nottingham Forest earlier in this programme, Leeds United, Wolves were down there for a long time. The Sheffield Wednesday, Stevie's old club, have been away for a long time. But good clubs, really good clubs. So, yeah, I would be hugely concerned, obviously, if I was an Evertonian at this point.
I reckon, Stevie?
It would be a huge disaster. And the thing is as well, what you know, along with Craig, I see the headlines about maybe Frank will go. Let's be honest here. Frank's not the one who's completely missing the kick 5 yards from goal, because that's what's doing them right now. You've got the likes of Keane and Holgate, who are somehow missing a clearance with nobody near them that somebody that's actually paid to play the game should be able to do very, very comfortably. So you can't put that on Frank or anybody else. They're not good players. They've bought bad players. However, if they want to come straight back up, if they did go down, then it would be worth Mashiri putting his hand in his pocket and saying, right, everybody that we need, your Calvert-Lewins and your Richarlisons, people like that, you're staying, you're getting the same money, and you bring us back up in 12 months. And if you don't, then you can go. Because they have to come straight back up. And if they keep the good players that they have, then they will. You know, you look at Fulham, you look at Mitrovic, who couldn't score in the Premier League, partly because the service wasn't particularly there, and partly because he's just not quite that great in the Premier League. But if you go in the Championship, the guy's absolute dynamite. So that's why I'm saying, if you keep your Calvert-Lewins and your Richarlisons and you put your hand in your pocket to make sure that they stay, then you will come back up.
All right. Nadim, the question for you. Do you think Pep, with all the rotation, sometimes does not know what his best starting 11 is? Unlike his days in Barcelona, where he had a fixed starting 11, is this the reason they sometimes struggle in big Champions League games?
I'm not sure, because then we were even talking about Liverpool before and how they've got such a deep squad now that you're trying to decide who comes in at which point. I think to have those options is a good thing. I think if you end up being in a point where this is the guaranteed starting 11 all the time, it means as soon as somebody falls out, then it's a significant drop-off. But I think for the two sides up there at the minute, like, you don't really get that sort of feel. You're wondering who they're going to play, and you understand the strengths and weaknesses of whoever's going to be in the side, but you understand that they're still going to fall in line with the style of play. So I think in some ways he knows the players who are in form, as is why someone like Bernardo Silva's played so many games this year, Rodri's played so many games and the like. But then in the same breath, you know, he likes the competition and he knows that whoever he puts in is going to be motivated to do well. And these are very, very good players. So I think maybe gone are the days whereby you only have a starting 11. And if it's not that, then it's the end of the world. And I think he's probably in a good spot because of that.
Nadim, what are your whole thoughts on this Pep overthinking the games and him getting a bit sensitive about it? Does he overthink it?
I don't know. I think it's reached a point, say, for example, this season, where they've played different types of formations, different people in different spots. So whatever he goes for on Sunday, the likelihood is that you've seen it before. I think if we go back to, say, the Champions League last year with RS6, you know, that's a very specific thing. But we're talking about four or five games across a 4 or 5 year period where people have like asked significant questions. But the other stuff has been pretty good. So I think if those are going to be sort of like, if his legacy is going to come down to those four games, then it's a shame. Because within that, he's still played some of the best football we've seen and he's developed a lot of these players as well. So, you know, I understand why you get upset about people saying he's overthinking. He is very thoughtful and does try and do things in a certain manner. And it's not always going to work out because, you know, at the end of the day, you are playing 11 other professionals. But overall, he seems to be doing pretty well. And most of the players you've played for him across those years, you can see how they're actively better players. And the system has been one whereby they've managed to get a ton of points. So, and even going back to something we said during the show, someone will finish second this year and they might have 90 points. Let's be clear, they've not really failed during the season. So at the end of the day, I think he's an exceptional manager and it's going to be an iconic one when we look back in a few years' time.
Does anybody know their best starting 11? Because you've had De Bruyne, Foden, Silva.
Oh, so does anybody know their best starting?
Well, as the invisible or the false name, like whatever you want to call
it. That was like an age-old question. Like, does anybody know their starting 11? Does anybody know?
Well, no, I don't think anybody does. I don't think even Pep. You know, if you were to say to Pep right now, OK, when you're playing this invisible nine, a false nine, whatever you want to call it, who's the best one you've got at it? I don't think he could tell you. I don't think anybody can tell you. Because
it's amazing.
Because if they did, surely they wouldn't have had six different people playing in that position.
It's amazing that the questions seem to be recently about overthinking. When, okay, that's fair enough. You can ask questions if that's what you want. But this is currently the most, I believe, successful manager on the planet. I mean, if you were running a club at the moment, the two managers that are facing off on Sunday, you you'd walk over broken glass, wouldn't you? And through a Bumbling Head used to try and get those two. So, you know, as Nedim said, he's prepared. He has been prepared to do things that probably not many, if any, other managers have been prepared to do. And he's going to live and die by that. And so far, certainly domestically in England, he's been quid zin. I mean, they've had so many Premier Leagues and Carabao Cups, and domestically they've been brilliant. So yeah, I mean, he might tinker, but my God, he's still hugely successful.
Cut the belters there, eh? Broken glass. Burning hedges.
No, but I want to come to Stuart on what Craig's saying, because Stuart, do the questions like this and the overthinking with Pep come down to the fact that there hasn't been that Champions League win again for him?
Yeah, but I when you talk about overthinking, Pep Guardiola is the brilliant coach he is because he's a great thinker. He's done things differently to other people. Who would have said Mascherano when he was at Barcelona would become a centre-back? Who would have said Kimmich when he was at Bayern Munich could be a centre-back who came out with the ball? Who would have said that full-backs should come in field and play in a number six position when the other midfield players go forward to create an overload there? Who would have thought lots of different things that he's done? Who would play with a false nine that's so deep and the two wide players going further forward? He's a brilliant manager, and I don't think you should be accused of that. We're also accusing, or people are accusing, Ancelotti of picking the same team week in, week out, and that's a problem. So make your minds up. What do you want as people?
Yeah, you can't get away with it. And I mean, I'm going to end this here, but I just can't get over the fact that I didn't need to pay all that money to go to one of those genetic sites to find out what my history was, when I should have just told you and you'd just have told me.
See?
50% Scottish.
Well, hey, you know where I live.
25% Scottish, 40% Scottish. Thanks so much for your questions. Thanks to the guys for being here as well. And we'll see you again and do it all over again.
If that's tomorrow. Key, tell her to get lost.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.